Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Happy Saturday, folks. It's Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Another week come and gone. You know, this week wasn't quite so tumultuous. Did you notice it? There was like a little lull in the action. Of course, that's relatively speaking. We did have the raid on Cohen, Trump's attorney, by Mueller and the U.S. attorney from the Southern District of New York. And we had that little matter of, you know, taking out a bunch of Syrian stuff last night. In fact, I believe it's over. But a strike by France, Britain, and the United States on Syrian installations, which I'll be talking about in this show. And we had a host of other things, too. There were many things which occurred this week, though, that were below the radar, just like in previous weeks. And like in previous weeks, I'm going to bring them to your attention, including some mind ticklers. We're also going to be covering tonight, in addition to Syria, because I want you to know, the Syrian thing, in my opinion, is not about the chemical gas attack at all. It's about something far larger. And we're going to talk a little bit about McCabe, because, you know, Horowitz is a portion of his long-awaited Inspector General report came out, but it was just that portion that was related to McCabe. And we're going to be talking about AMAC just a little bit. You know, if you put in the search bar AMAC or AARP, I did a whole show comparing the two of them. Not a whole show, but a whole segment of a show. Three, 4 weeks ago. Well, you know what? I joined AMAC because I wanted to see for myself. And I will tell you what my observations and experience has been in the last two or three weeks with AMAC. And we're going to be talking about, we're going to be talking about reparations and maybe your land getting taken away from you or your house or your condo. You think I'm kidding, huh? No, I'm unfortunately not kidding, folks, at all. In fact, I'll refer you back to the show. I believe if you type in the search bar, the Tactics of the Progressives, I believe that show will come up. It's actually a series. I'm three shows into it. I have two or three more shows to go. But I started off with telling you about, because you know, obviously nobody's covering it, telling you about what happened to white settlers, farmers, ranchers, etc., fourth, fifth generation, I mean, not, you know, recent, in Rhodesia, now Zimbabwe, and what happened to the economy after that. And I also told you and give you a whole bunch of history about our buddy Mugabe, who rose to power and then was replaced by another guy just in the last several months in South Africa. And a change to the constitution in South Africa where they are now seizing all white men's farms and property. No compensation, by the way. Just seizing it. And, of course, giving it to their cronies. And I think you'll see the South African economy go the same way as the Zimbabwe economy. Zimbabwe, by the way, is in the midst of a famine because all these folks who got the farms didn't know how to run the farms. It went from a lush and prosperous country called Rhodesia to a famined, desolate economic wasteland called Zimbabwe. Same fate coming to South Africa. And I tied into that Maxine Waters and her call for reparations in this country. And by the way, she's not the only one. I'm going to tell you just a little bit about that this morning, too, because that's still unfolding here in the United States, believe it or not. And we're going to talk rather extensively about just how, shall we say, unfulfilling is this attack in Syria. You know, the 68 or 69, whatever it was, cruise missiles almost exactly a year ago. And whatever happened last night, I'm broadcasting to you too early. in the morning to know what the damage assessments are by the military. Our military, the French military, the British military. So I can't tell you what we think we got done. But we're going to be talking about that. Very important. Because, you know, it doesn't do us any good. It doesn't do us any good at all to be taking these steps when American dollars are winding up funding terror. Thank you, Obama. If you remember last week's show, by the way, I gave you a whole rendition of all the things which we're contending with now, many of which our kids will be contending with, that were instituted in little poison pills intended to fail, underline intended to fail, by Barack Obama and his cabal. And you know, that bombing of Syria last night and the ongoing problems which it didn't dent are part of that poison pill package from the alt-left Islamist himself. And I've been threatening to do this for how long? Months and months and months. I've gotten bits and pieces and dribs and drabs of it done. But how high-tech is beginning to control your life and, unfortunately, control your elections. And if you remember, we have an awfully important election coming up just about 124 days from now, believe it or not. 124 days, right? May, June, July, August, September. Maybe it's 154 days. In any event, it's right around the corner. So, and I'm of course going to start you off with a story, because what would a On the Right Side radio show be without the story? So that's where I'm going to begin, the story. So we have a bunch of horses out here, some of ours, and a number of others from other folks from all over. We have horse pasture tenants from as far south as New Mexico and as far north as Montana and from the Dakotas, Wyoming, Colorado, all over the place. In fact, these ranches have gotten quite a reputation for horse pasture, horse hay, you name it. And many times the owners are not here, obviously. In fact, just a few owners partake of one of the fringe bennies of having horses pastured with us, which is, other than hunting season, you can saddle up anytime you want, and you have here on the home place 5,000 or so surface acres to ride on and enjoy of all sorts of varying topography and terrain and creek bottom. It's a pretty nice little benny. We even have a little shed down in the barn area that is kind of a community tax shed where you can leave all your stuff, and some people leave their trailers here too. We don't charge extra. But you know, horses are critters that always get into trouble. Kind of like humans. In fact, you'll see that this story, like most of the stories I tell you, ties into this show. So horses, they get into the wrong places at the wrong time. They are ingenious at finding their way through, around, over, whatever fences. They can jump cattle guards with a single bound and run on down the highway. And, of course, their curiosity gets them in trouble with rattlesnakes and cactus and you name it, a host of other things. And, you know, they're not as tough a creature as most people think. You don't want them on green alfalfa because they'll colic and likely die. The protein content has to be just right so they don't get too fat and don't get too thin when they're munching on grass. I mean, it's pretty interesting. And like any pets that many of you listeners may have, like your cat, your dog, whatever, they have to be wormed and their teeth have to be floated so they can chew their pasture just right. They have a complex digestive system, kind of like a cow, kind of a double stomach type deal going on, which can be interesting when things go wrong. And just like your dog and cat, you get attached to them if they're yours. I had a horse for many, many years. His name was Tramp. We went all over the place. We had all sorts of tight spots together. This horse was unflappable. Best horse I've ever owned, bar none. And he loved to hunt. And he was gentle and he was smart. He was great. And he lived to a ripe old age of 32. In fact, the other horses out here were way jealous of him his last 5 years when he was, quote-unquote, put out the pasture when he was retired, because he had the run of the whole ranch. He was the only horse that didn't have its designated pasture. And when I talk about pasture out in this country, I mean it's 500-acre pasture. It's not, you know, 5 acres in a pen. But he could go anywhere he wanted, and he chose most of the time to hang around the ranch house and blow me kisses through the window. It was pretty cool. But like every other living thing, it is inevitable that at one point you are no longer living. But that's not really my story. That's just an interesting personal adjunct for you. So it's 2 days ago. We had a bunch of horses out in the pivot field, which is a grass alfalfa mix, and starting to green up, and I wanted to get them out of there so they didn't run into that too rich a feed type thing, too hot a feed, as we call it in the horse biz. And so we decided to move them out of there. And by the way, when the ground is damp, horse hooves can do damage if horses are running. They kind of throw up clumps of dirt and take out the soft sod at that time of the spring. To make a long story short, myself and a ranch hand went out there, and there were about, I think it was 17 or 18 horses. There's another bunch that's down in the canyon field, another bunch that's up in what we call the upper field, another bunch out by the road fields. But this particular bunch liked to hang out in the alfalfa field and the adjacent what we call reserve pasture, another 50 acres. So we go trundling out there because we wanted to get the fields brushed in addition to getting the horses off the pivot. And when I say brush fields, for those of you who don't know the term, it is a process whereby you take, in our case, homemade, a cyclone fence with heavy metal bar weights on it, and you drag it behind the tractor or the truck or the ATV, depending upon the size of the field and how many nooks and crannies, and you take all those big piles of horse manure and cow manure from the fall. And after you run that cyclone fence, what we call the brusher, over the field, all that manure is broken up into tiny little pieces and spread out nicely. And the field looks manicured. I mean, it's pretty amazing. It looks brushed. That's what it looks like. Kind of like a brushed painting of a field. And it looks great. And it looks a lot better than, you know, piles and mounds of manure every 10 feet. Anyway, we wanted to get the field brushed. We got the horses out of there. We checked all the fences. Everything was fine. We made sure all the gates into the field were closed. Everything was good. My ranch hand went out there, and he got the field brushed. Took him most of the day. It's a pretty big field. And when he got done, sure enough, there it was. Beautiful pivot field, all brushed, ready for some what we call overseeding, where you bring a no-till drill machine in, you don't harrow the ground because that brings weeds. And there's a pneumatic pump that pumps seeds into the ground from a 16 or 24-foot boom behind the seeding truck. And that kind of enhances the growth and gives you a different mix of grasses. But I digress. I'm getting into the weeds here. No pun intended. That was pretty clever, wasn't it? Anyway, the field is brushed. I'm all pleased. It's about 60 degrees, beautiful spring day, the sun is out. I'm back at the ranch house making myself some coffee and going through some emails and doing some work on the books. Yes, folks, doing some work on the books. And I look out the kitchen window. I got a pair of binoculars right here by the kitchen sink. I look out the kitchen window and I went, "What's that out there in the pivot field?" I put the binoculars to my eyes. Well, it's all the horses back in the pivot field that we had just finished brushing. In fact, that we had spent most of the day brushing and a good 2 or 3 hours rounding up horses to get them out of the pivot field. And I said a few choice words to myself, and I hustled on out there on the ATV. And here are all these horses munching contentedly on the newly brushed field and, of course, depositing their piles. The field was quickly becoming unbrushed, shall we say. So I hustle around, I get my ranch hand, and off we go again to move the horses. And in doing so, because it was kind of curious how they got in there, we found a bunch of fence that had been just fine that was hanging loosely in one case on the ground because elk had run it over. You know, elk kind of like greening up alfalfa fields too. And they'll come down from the higher parts of the ranch in the night and wreck their havoc, particularly on fences. And the horses had found this little gap in the fence, and they had exploited it, and they were all in there frolicking. Well, we got them moved. And this time we didn't move them to the fields around the pivot field. We moved them a half a mile away back down to the canyon field, which was quite a rodeo, I might add, because they really did not want to leave where they were at. So the moral of this story is, anytime you think you have something done, make sure whatever you have done is fenced out or fenced in. Otherwise, it will become undone. And with that prelude to the show, we'll begin the show. So number one, we have Mr. McCabe, Andy McCabe, deputy guy at the FBI, and, you know, bitter, nasty, Trump hater, Hillary lover, you name it. That's what he is. And there's a lot more coming. But, you know, I was struck not so much by the fact that the IG's partial report, which got released yesterday afternoon, if you guys are following the news, not that it kind of corroborated and enhanced what we already thought, knew about Andy McCabe. Let's see. He lied at least four times, at least two of them under oath. He broke a whole bunch of federal statutes and a whole bunch of inviolate FBI rules, and I believe I have some articles posted under treason. And he had leaked classified information to the press, and had lied about it, by the way, another felony. And he had overseen other leaks to the press, another felony, and lied about it, another felony. And I think where we're going to wind up is exactly where we thought we were going to wind up. Old Andy ain't going to get his pension, and old Andy's going to get prosecuted. So none of that was really a revelation other than how many times this guy lied and how many times he feloniously and treasonously leaked information. What was surprising to me was that the IG released just a part of his report. And it kind of solidified the thinking that I've been having on this, particularly since the same week, just a few days earlier, here was the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York, egged on and referred by Mueller, the special counsel, kicking in the doors of Cohen, Trump's personal attorney, at his office, at his home, at his hotel room. I mean, very unusual. Of course, they did the same thing to Manafort. But, you know, I don't think it was coincidence that you had the Cohen really nasty spectacle, really atrocious, way beyond the pale, a glaring example really of government out of control, government brutality. I mean, you can't tell me they couldn't subpoena Cohen and get the same information. And it led me to believe that, number one, what's happening on, we'll call it the Trump side, I'm more convinced than ever now that Sessions and Trump are playing Mutt and Jeff. I talked about this last show. That there's really much more going on behind the scenes in terms of going after Comey, whose new book is about to come out, and he's doing a big interview, and I think it's, what, on ABC on Sunday, like, you know, gag me. I'm going to watch it for one reason, because it will gag me. I'm going to watch it for one reason, that is to bring you the news on it. And that's it. So hope all you folks appreciate the fact that I'm going to gag to make sure I do the right job for you. Huh? That make you feel good? I'm a martyr. A radio martyr. Anyway, Comey is running around shooting his mouth off about how big the president's hands are and what color his skin is from the sun tanning booth and whatever other, What a girly man, in addition to being a traitor. But it occurs to me that the IG report was released on McCabe just 2 days after the raid on Cohen as kind of a tit-for-tat, so to speak, as a way to balance out the news cycle and the news. And it convinced me that not only is there a lot more going on in terms of going after McCabe and Comey, but if I combine it with another series of articles, which were kind of in the subterranean press, not covered at all, but a whole bunch of emails now and stuff has been uncovered by Jay Sekulow at ACJL. They're the group, of course, and I urge you to contribute, you know, 10, 15, 20 bucks to them, that have just done a yeoman's job through FOIA requests and huge court battles in getting documents that Congress can't get and exposing this rampant treasonous corruption in a number of Obama's State Departments, in a number of Obama's departments and agencies, you know, his shadow government and deep state. Another of his poison pills designed to fail, by the way. And I think what we're seeing here, folks, is a foot race. Yes, a legal nuclear winter foot race. I think there is a desperate race between the Trump folks, that would be Trump, Sessions, Huber, who is in effect the second special counsel appointed by Sessions, and Horowitz, amongst others, and Mueller and his scumbucket dirty cop team, to see who can land a knockout blow first. I'm really getting more and more convinced of this as I see this play out. And we're going to be talking more about this in the future because this is unfolding rather rapidly. I expect that in response to the partial release of the OIG report exposing McCabe to not only be the fraud, traitor, liar, and felony perp that we thought, but 10x that, I would expect to see an indictment or two out of Mueller in the next week to even the playing field. And then I'd expect to see either all or another portion of the IG's report released, kind of nailing one of the cabal of corruption to the cross of justice, so to speak. And I think you're going to see this tit-for-tat go on for several months. So, that's my take on that. The Cowboys' take. Which, by the way, I gave you the wrong information on Twitter. on Twitter, on the Right Side Radio, and myself, your poor old hayseed reporting to you from the wilds of Wyoming, is the Cowboys' take. I told you on the Right Side Radio, don't listen to what I say. I'm not a techie. The Cowboys' take. So follow us, if you would. I think we're up to a huge, what is it, about like 600 or so followers. I mean, woo. Hold on to your hat, but we're gaining. And I actually have some folks now, the producers have set me up, and our social media people through the publishers, actually, have set me up with some folks who are going to be handling Twitter far better and far more often than I have. So I think you'll see some good stuff on our Twitter feed. Now, the next thing we're going to cover, and I'm going to do this really quick, boom, 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 because we are absolutely, positively going to get to the mess that is Google, Facebook. Did you see those hearings this week? Zuckerman in front of Congress? Wow, scary, scary. We'll be talking about it. I wanted to mention to you, by the way, that yesterday was also Thomas Jefferson's birthday. Thomas Jefferson's birthday. The guy who almost single-handedly drafted the Declaration of Independence, one of the 74 signers of the Constitution, President of the United States, one of the founders, one of the real founders, one of the Washington, Adams, Monroe, Jefferson level founders. And one of the young men I talked about in the story last week. All done at the ripe old age of, I believe, 23. The same guy, by the way, that the students at Hofstra, they want to take his statue down now because he owns slaves. Never mind the fact that he wrestled and anguished over the fact that he owned slaves, had in his will that they would all be set free, and wrote the founding documents, which in effect did set them free, although not completely until the next generation of Jeffersons took up the battle cry in the Civil War just 70 years later. In other words, took up arms to enforce the Constitution Jefferson had written, that all men are created equal. That is not a writing of a man who believed in slavery, folks. And the next little tidbit I want to give you is AMAC. So, you know, I did the show on AARP versus AMAC. AARP is much bigger, much better marketing, very progressive, throws all sorts of money at Democrats and progressive causes. Of course, they don't trumpet that out. And then AMAC is much smaller, 500,000, I guess now up to 600,000 members, kind of the conservative senior club, shall we say. And I was really interested in this, and I joined AMAC. And by the way, you can join either of these outfits at any age. You know, I'm just 21, so you can join at any age. And certain benefits kick in when you're 50, and others. Kick in when you're older, etc. But there's benefits in both. Anyway, I joined AMAC, and you know, it was only $16 for the year. I was astounded. That is like a fraction of what AARP charges you for a year. It was $16. And there were several other memberships I could have picked that were a little bit loftier and had a little bit more oomph and poof and silver and gold and whatever. But you know that in the 2 weeks since I joined AMAC, I've gotten all sorts of interesting stuff from them. They have a really great dental plan. They have a really great vision plan, which, of course, you can't really find in the, you know, over 50 class of private insurance or Medicare, if you happen to be into that deal now. And they've had several great emails kind of telling you about other programs or specials or letting you know about this or that or getting you news. Conservative news, by the way, that affects, shall we say, older folks, 50 and over. So far, my report to you is that I'm very impressed with AMAC. Very impressed with AMAC. And I would urge those of you who are, quote-unquote, of age, 50 and over, if you're a member of AARP, cancel the membership, go to AMAC. By the way, they have free towing, kind of like AAA, you know, I mean, all sorts of pretty cool benefits. And for $16 a year, I mean, $16, can't beat it. Absolutely can't beat it. Next thing we're going to talk about, I'm going to be doing a whole show on this. I have mentioned this several times over the past several years, particularly relative to these mass shootings, and how the, in most cases, the prototype seems to fit. One of the few times it didn't fit, of course, is the shooting at Google. And I don't know if you know this or not, but yeah. And by the way, did you know how the mainstream media just kind of dropped that shooting? Instead of pouncing on it to promote their hysterical anti-gun stuff, they just dropped it. Like, you know, you heard about it for 2 days and then you didn't hear about it anymore. Well, you know, that might have something to do with that, number one, it was a woman. And number two, the woman was Iranian. Oh, an Iranian refugee. Huh. So we had refugee, we had woman, and we had Iranian. No wonder the mainstream media didn't want to talk about that particular shooter. It just didn't fit that image of, you know, the rabid white guy, using his gun to exercise his white privilege. Yeah, pretty interesting. But one of the things which has intrigued me, if you look at the pictures of all these guys, if you look at the pictures of Paddock, down there in Las Vegas. And by the way, I'm going to be bringing you more information on that next week because more is coming out. You realize what kind of cover-up is going on down there, don't you? And by the way, flows right back to the FBI, just like the Parkland shooting does. Oh, yeah, and the Pulse nightclub shooting. Oh, yeah, the San Bernardino shooting. And, oh, yeah, the Columbine shooting even. Huh, what a coincidence. But one of the things that I've noticed is that all these people, if you look at the guy, another one, the Aurora movie theater shooting, if you look at a picture of the Aurora movie shooter and the picture of Paddock and the picture of this tweeb that shot up Parkland, these guys all look alike. And I don't mean they are all tall or they're all short or they're all fat or they're all skinny. The look in their eyes looks alike. I even mentioned it in one show. To look at the pictures of two of these perps side by side, because it's really striking. And you know the other striking thing that kind of ties all these in? Virtually all of these people talk about hearing voices in their head. And I talked a little bit about 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, it was just kind of a mention, it was kind of like a mini segment in a show, about how Russia had developed, according to the back channels, some of the back channels that I read, that Russia had developed some kind of mind control thing, like radio waves, etc., etc., that could get people, if they were susceptible to it, to perform certain acts, including some pretty heinous acts. And another thing which ties in all these shooters is that they were on some kind of psychotropic drugs. And if I mispronounce that, sorry to the doctors in the audience. But we're talking about, you know, antidepressant drugs, those kind of things. You know, that's a lot of dots that connect, don't you think? That's a lot of, it's just too many coincidences to be coincidences. And I stumbled across an article. In fact, I've stumbled across several. I've been storing them up. But I stumbled across an article. And it was a clipping from a book. And it was about the CIA and a plot to use school shootings to disarm citizens. It was written before Parkland, by the way. And I'm just going to read you something. Oh, and then throw in the opioid crisis, right? The drug crisis that is going on. The government encouraged the manufacture and importation of military firearms for the criminals to use. This is intended to foster a feeling of insecurity, which would lead the American people to voluntarily disarm themselves by passing laws against firearms. Using drugs and hypnosis on mental patients in a process called Orion, the CIA inculcated the desire in these people to open fire on schoolyards and thus inflame the anti-gun lobby. Huh. Now, listen, I don't know anything about this book. I don't know anything about this author. He may be a total quack. But I do know that all these other little dots I just gave you do in fact exist. And I'm going to be bringing you a whole report, because I'm putting together the information now and I've been gathering it for some time, on all these dots of mind-altering drugs, susceptible personalities, mind control by other governments, which in a way kind of ties into this Google, Facebook, etc. stuff, and a seeming continual, in fact unbroken, pattern of failure by federal intelligence agencies and law enforcement agencies like the FBI, who have people on their radar, but never seem to apprehend them before they do some terrible act. It's very curious. I'll be bringing you a full story. The next thing we're going to talk about, in fact, while we're on it, let me give you the other couple of tidbits, if you want to call it, on gun control. First of all, today, April 14th, there are a number of significant rallies planned in virtually every state capital across the country, folks. In fact, I think there is an article I posted by the Oath Keepers, a tremendous organization. I interviewed Stuart Rhodes, constitutional scholar, attorney, smart guy. He gets it. I mean, very impressive. And he is the founder of the Oath Keepers, which is a terrific organization, mostly military and law enforcement, many retired, obviously. And you can actually buy, even if you're not military or law enforcement, you can get a membership in the Oath Keepers. It's called an associate member, and I believe it's like $29, $30, whatever it is for the year. And you get a lot of good information. You're kept abreast of many things which the mainstream media is not going to keep you abreast of. And you're linking arms with 600,000 or 700,000 fellow Americans who think like you do. The great majority of them veterans and law enforcement. And fierce defenders, by the way, of the Second Amendment. So that article and, shall we say, call to arms, for lack of a better term, to attend these rallies is posted under the audio bar here if you're listening by podcast or off the website. And I would urge you to join the Oath Keepers. But at the very least, I would urge you, if you have the time today, and if you don't have the time, then, you know, tweet it out, do a blast on Facebook to all your buddies, any other social media you're on, and, you know, get as many people to these rallies at the state capitals today as you can. I mean, the better the display of people, the more political importance it will have with all these incredible, insane bills floating around cities and towns and states and the federal government. I mean, these people are out for blood, folks, and the blood is your guns. The blood is the Second Amendment. There's no doubt about it, and they want to take your guns. Last week I told you about the towns in Chicago passed an ordinance banning so-called assault weapons. I mean, these people don't even know what they talk about when they talk about these weapons. And if you didn't turn them in 60 days, it was like, you know, big jail time, $1,000 a day fine. I mean, totally, totally illegal. And Boulder, Colorado, which is lefty, 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 beautiful city, but lefty, 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 kind of the Berkeley of the Rockies. In the last week, Boulder, Colorado passed an anti-assault weapon. In fact, they banned what they call assault weapons. And their description of assault weapon covers about any weapon that has a handle and a trigger. And I'm not being facetious. It also bans bump stocks, high-capacity magazines, which, by the way, I thought were already limited to 7 bullets in a magazine in Colorado to begin with. It would require any city resident with a firearm that falls under the provision, remember, it's a hugely broad provision, to register in a gun registry with the Boulder Police Department. Oh, sure, I'm gonna rush right down to that Boulder Police Department and go, Ossifer, Ossifer, here's a list of all my guns. Where do I sign? Oh, my. Now, this ordinance happens to have been passed in contravention of a Colorado state law. I mean, not that that would bother the lefties in Boulder, which, by the way, it passed unanimously, despite the fact that 111 people spoke at the first reading of the ordinance, and the huge majority, I think it was like 107 of the 111, were against the ordinance. Who cares what the people think? Let's pass this thing. Yeah, okay. The Colorado law, which precludes the passage of this ordinance to begin with, never mind the fact, you know, there's that thing called the Second Amendment. You know, that thing that Jefferson, the guy who had the birthday yesterday, signed. The Colorado law, which was passed in 2003, by the way, prevents, quote, municipalities of the Centennial State from enacting an ordinance, regulation, or other law that prohibits the sale, purchase, or possession of a firearm that a person may lawfully sell, purchase, or possess under state or federal law. Gee. Boulder, Colorado is going to pass an ordinance that's not only against federal law and the Constitution, but against the state law that says they can't pass the law. Gotcha. It's the left at work again. And, you know, along the lines of the gun control theme, the Second Amendment theme, I have another list of boogeymen that you can add to your, and I've given you them for another reason already, add to your list of folks not to do business with. You know, I've done several shows now on the banking system. Put in canaries in the economic coal mine, and then the show after that, and then last week I was telling you about Citicorp again and Wells Fargo, what's happening there. But Bank of America Corp, as of this week, they're no longer going to lend to any companies that make, once again, that generic term, assault-style guns for non-military purposes. Okay, assault-style guns. Well, now, what does that mean? Does that mean a hunting rifle with a bolt? I mean, I think it means about all guns. That's about what it comes down to. They're just masking it as assault-style, kind of like the Boulder City Council deal here. And let's see what they have to say. Oh, this is the vice chairman at the Bank of America, Ann Funicane. It's our intention not to finance these military-style firearms for civilian use, unquote. We have had, quote, intense conversations over the last few months with those kinds of gun manufacturers to tell them we won't finance their operations in the future, unquote. Well, look, if you've been listening to me, you know that Bank of America is one of the 19 big banks that you don't want to have anything to do with. I don't care if you're a company. I don't care if you're a manufacturer of slingshots or if you're just Sally Lou who's retired and getting Social Security. Let me underline this, bold it, italicize it, capitalize it, and then underscore it again. You do not want to associate with, do business with, have a loan with, have a credit card with, and certainly not have an account in which your money, which you think is your money, but is really their money once you deposit it, with the big banks, the 19 big banks, Wells Fargo, Bank of America, Chase Manhattan, JP Morgan, Citicorp, the whole cabal. They are corrupt. And as you can see by Bank of America and Citicorp, last week I brought you that story. They are also anti-American, on top of everything. So, a word to the wise, you folks who still have accounts with Bank of America, get them out of there. Okay, next quickie. So going back to my theory that we're in a foot race now between, shall we say, the righteous forces of Trump justice and the dirty cop mob of Mueller and Comey and the rest, Jay Sekulow from that outfit got a whole bunch of documents virtually uncovered by the mainstream media. Gee, what a big surprise. And it happens to do with the unmasking by Samantha Powers, which I've talked about numerous times. And I think I told you now, another correct forecast, 2 months ago, that we were hearing all sorts of stuff about the FBI and the FBI lies and the FBI leaks and the FBI FISA and all that kind of stuff. But what we weren't hearing about, but we would be hearing about, was an equal or greater series of felonies and traitorous acts And that is the unmasking of all these people and all these illegal transcripts, which were obtained based on a legal FISA warrant through an illegal application to the FISA court based on illegal documents paid for by Hillary Clinton. I mean, I think that succinctly sums up the flow. And sure enough, here is a headline. Trump attorney uncovers new unmasking docs showing Samantha Power actively worked with media to undermine Trump during transition. This is no longer the candidate. This is interfering with the president of the United States elect. Here's another headline I want to bring to your attention. I'm not even going to go into these stories because they're almost self-explanatory from the headlines. GOP snakes join Democrats. Will introduce bill to protect dirty cop Robert Mueller. I want you to think about this. So these GOP rhinos don't have the cojones to go out and make sure justice is done relative to Hillary Clinton, Cheryl Mills, Uma Abedin, Comey, McCabe, Strzok, Page, Orr, Baker, Straczynski, Obama, Rice, Rhodes, you name it, Powers. I mean, the list goes on and on. It's getting bigger by the day. But they want to introduce a bill to make sure Trump can't fire Mueller. Okay. I think if they read the Constitution, I don't think Trump can fire Mueller. I think that Jeff Sessions can fire Rosenstein, and the guy who comes into Rosenstein's place can fire Mueller. Rosenstein could fire Mueller, but Rosenstein is, you know, a traitorous slime ball like the rest of them, and in up to his eyeballs in Uranium-1 and a host of other cover-ups, so he's not going to. Sessions can't fire Mueller because he's recused himself from the Russia deal. And Trump, I don't really care what everybody else says, if you can read the Constitution, he could fire Mueller, I suppose, but I think that might be successfully challenged just as a matter of constitutional law. But here we have these GOP rhinos running around putting together a bill completely unconcerned about the equal application of justice in America, the rule of law, and the Constitution, so that Trump can't fire who he can't fire anyway, i.e. Mueller. Gee, you think this is political? And then we have a third one here, which is going to tie into our final segment. Yeah, that we're finally going to get to. Zuckerberg admits Facebook made, quote, enforcement error, unquote, in determining Diamond and Silk unsafe for the community and is working to reverse it. Yeah. Diamond and Silk declared unsafe for the community by the Facebook watchdogs. And then here's another headline, breaking. FBI admits Trump-hating FBI lovebirds. You're going to love this, folks. Peter Strzok and Lisa Page still have top security clearance. How deep is this swamp, folks? Now, yeah, I mean, it just boggles the mind. Here are these two folks. Never mind the impropriety, which I'm sure is against all sorts of regulations in their extramarital affair, where they're both employed at and working together in the FBI. But we have 50,000 tweets between them, which in black and white, I'll be kind, impugn their integrity. Now I'll be real. Show them to be the loathsome, treasonous swine that they are. Not only do they still have their jobs, which I'm hoping is because they're spilling their guts out to Huber and Horowitz on all the nasty stuff they know, but they also have their maximum security clearance. Do you feel much safer now that you know the secrets of America are open to them anytime they want to turn on their computer and enter their special government password? Gives me a warm, tingly feeling. You know, amazing. All right. Then we have Then we have this really scary story, actually. So I told you, and I'm going to be continuing that series next week, I told you about all the things that progressives do, the progressive tactics. We all know what they want, what their goals are. But I've been bringing you a series, and I've covered about 60% of it now, in the progressives' turn red to blue plan. Control of democracy, remove people's will, control information, control speech, which we're going to be talking about here just a bit through high tech. Control of information, purchase of local offices, courts, control of judiciary, redistricting, battling the proper questions on the census, division, make sure everybody's divided by race, gender, age, religion. Allegiance with Islamists. Personal avoidance policy. In other words, you know, it wasn't my fault. And if it was my fault, you told me to do it, so it was really your fault. It's kind of like the alcoholics stuff, if you know what I mean. Immigration, voter fraud, education, which is one of the big ones I still have left to cover for you. Boy, that'll curl your hair. Create rather than solve problems. Never let a crisis go to waste. Lie by representation and omission. Disarm the population. Castrate men. Literally or figuratively, depending upon who you might be on the left. Create and maintain dependency. Divest America of jobs and resources. And overburden America with financial entitlement. The Cloward and Piven theory. Well, when I did that show, I told you a lot about Zimbabwe, Rhodesia, and South Africa. And right now, as we speak, the lands and property, they already took it in Zimbabwe and Rhodesia. The lands and property of white people, that's the only qualification you need to qualify for the dubious distinction of having all your property, even if it's been in your family for five generations, you've busted your butt, and it's a beautiful place, and, you know, it's your heart and your soul, and it contributes mightily to the national economy and feeding the national population. If you're white, you can no longer own that property, and you're not going to be paid a dime, and that property is going to be given to somebody else by the government, or divvied up and given to a number of somebody else's who are not white. I mean, it would be bad enough, folks, if a government was simply redistributing wealth, like Obama, of course, wished to do, the alt-left, from one person to another, no matter who, should we say, those that are being taken from and those that are being given to, whatever color they are. But the fact that a whole class of people, hardworking property owners, who thought they were protected by a constitution, who invested generations in some cases, and in other cases just their lives, into what they thought was a system where you work hard, you build up your property, and you get ahead and create benefit for everybody else, that's now being taken from you without an ounce of consideration. In fact, if you try and resist, you'll be shot. And it's not like we're giving you 10-year notice. It's more like you'll be out of here in a week. And whatever of your possessions aren't moved, we'll take those too. And that's going on right now, this minute, as I speak to you, on April 14th, the year 2018, in South Africa. And I brought to you several statements, including by Maxine Waters, a congresswoman, that if she had the right political setup in 2020, sure, she'd look at reparations. And if you look at Black Lives Matter, you'll see that part of their platform is reparations. And if you look at black liberation theology, you know, Jeremiah Wright, the guy who is running one of the black liberation theology churches, in the pews of which sat for 20 years Barack and Michelle Obama. That's another tenet of black liberation, reparations. It doesn't matter that 700,000 Americans died in the Civil War to right the wrong of slavery. It doesn't matter that slavery is thousands of years old. It was not invented here in America. It doesn't matter that the first slavers in North America were the Indians. In fact, it doesn't matter that the first slavers anywhere were Africans of other Africans. And one of the biggest slavery enterprises anywhere was Arabs. Gee, Barack Obama's ancestry. Arabs of other Arabs, black Americans, and Jews. None of that really matters. White America, white privilege, must atone for its sins. I mean, the degree to which this indicates racism on the other side, or shall we say the use of racism as a shield of social justice for the have-nots to get what the haves have, is amazing. And if you think if that ever gets started in America, that people will take it lying down, so long as they're armed, then you have another thing coming. One of the things which I think you'll find most interesting is that in Zimbabwe and Rhodesia and South America, the first thing they did was, oh yeah, disarm the population. And by disarming the entire population, of course, that included any folks who happened to be white and who happened to own property, which makes the defense of that property rather problematic. And what do we have going here? Let's see, we have Maxine Waters, Black Lives Matter, Black Liberation, a whole bunch of other radical black folks talking about reparations. And it's those same folks and a whole bunch of others who are talking about repealing the Second Amendment. I don't know. You think there's a connection here at all? You know, in the end, all wars between countries are economic. I've said it a million times. And I think in the end, all this social justice stuff, masked by gender stuff and feminism stuff and racism stuff and, you know, phobia this and phobia that and whatever, is really economic. I really do believe that. But there was an article in an American periodical this week, Newsweek, folks, Newsweek. Quote, white people in South Africa should stop panicking about losing their land, unquote. It was written by a guy by the name of Ben Cousins. And Cousins' bio, by the way, says he's a professor of, quote, poverty, land, and agrarian studies, unquote, at the University of Western Cape. Let me read this to you. White people in South Africa need to stop complaining about their land being stolen because many black South Africans view seizing their property as essential to restoring their dignity. Unquote. I want you to think about that statement. I want you to think about what's happening over there in South Africa to totally innocent folks. I want you to think about the impropriety and the injustice of it. I want you to think about what a whole bunch of Americans in a whole bunch of powerful positions, including sitting members of the Congress of the United States, have said about it. And I want you to think about what they've said about the Second Amendment at the same time, almost in the same breath. Okay. And you know, I'm going to tie this into my story at the beginning of this show. You make sure your fence is built to to make sure that things you've done don't get out and the things you don't want don't get in. I'll tie that in for you even a little bit better here in the coming segments. So the final thing we're going to talk about here before we get into, finally, Google, the alphabet soup of censorship from Google and Facebook and Microsoft and Twitter and, you know, who knows what else, YouTube. The final thing we're going to get into here is Syria. So yesterday, last night to be exact, B-1 bombers and B-2 bombers and aircraft carrier-based fighter jets and French jets out of wherever they came out of and British jets out of Cyprus and Tomahawk cruise missiles from a French frigate and an American destroyer rained down on Syria. There's rumors that we took out a huge Hezbollah military installation near Israel's border as kind of a little finger wag at Iran, since Hezbollah is one of their surrogates and they fund them with the money that Barry gave them, another of his poison pills. And supposedly we attacked three chemical weapons research and development facilities. It just so happens that at least two of those have been formally attacked by Israel twice in the past. So I guess if they're worth attacking now, the original attacks didn't do much. And of course there was, a week of hand-wringing and announcements and telegraphing and all sorts of stuff, not necessarily as to the specific targets, but as to the fact that there were targets and the missiles would be coming. I'm not sure what we accomplished, folks. And I think those of you who have listened to me for a while know that I'm not bashful about the exercise of American power. If judicially employed, and if it has a reason, and if it doesn't have potential unintended consequences down the road, kind of like, you know, the fence falling down, the horses getting back in the brush field. I mean, if your intent is to brush the field and be done, then you better check your fences against unintended consequences. Otherwise, bad things can get in and bad things can get out. And I'm not sure what we accomplished. More than that, I'm pretty sure that the primary reason for launching these attacks was not the chemical weapons usage at all. In fact, I'm not sure that it wasn't a false flag of some type by either Iran or by the rather radical Islamist rebels to whom the chemical weapons fate unfortunately befell. I mean, look, I don't care who did it. I don't even care why. I'm sure that it happened. And there's no way your guts can't be wrenched out watching those poor kids struggle for their last breath with foam coming out of their mouth while their parents look on in unimaginable panic, pain, and grief. There's no way. But I'm going to go beyond that. Because that is a given if you are a human being. As we are well aware, the left really doesn't care about human life. They didn't care about human life on the roofs of Benghazi. They didn't care about human life, 500,000 lives lost in this very conflict, the Syrian deal, which was precipitated by the alt-left's policies. They didn't care about the hundreds of thousands of people who were died, enslaved, sexually assaulted, mutilated, beheaded, you name it, by ISIS, which was a devilish child of the left. They didn't care about 34 soldiers being killed and wounded at Fort Hood. They didn't care about all these other shootings that the FBI was tipped off on, knew of the people, didn't stop. They don't care. Because human life and human suffering and human security is secondary to their agenda. And I think there's forces at play within governments and on the giant chessboard of the planet, not just domestically, that are bigger than this attack in Syria, bigger than the chemical attack, and bigger than the allied France, Britain, the United States response, or so should we say so-called response to the chemical attack. Because I don't think that response was about the chemical attack at all. If you really, 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 really wanted to teach the perps of the chemical attack, false flag or not, the perps are Iran and Russia. Assad is, you know, he's a puppet on a string. Some of the strings are pulled by the mullahs in Iran, using the money Barry gave them. And some of the strings are pulled by Putin and his merry crew over there in the Kremlin. Assad is just kind of the herky-jerky guy in the middle doing what everybody says. Or getting permission to do something before he does it. Because every breath he takes is contingent upon the continued applause, shall we say, of his Iranian and Russian keepers. He couldn't stand on his own 2 feet for 1 second. Not even against the ragtag band of Islamist rebels, which are running amok. So why do we do that, then? And why did we use the shield of this chemical attack to do what we did? I think the real target here, particularly, I might add, if this rumor about taking out this Hezbollah camp along with the chemical weapons factories, research centers, etc., particularly if that's correct, and particularly if the reports that the initial wave of attacks was targeted at the very sophisticated S-400 anti-aircraft systems, which the Russians have installed and or given to the Syrians to defend against American or Israeli air attacks. If that's the case, the real reason for this attack was to teach Russia that their air defense systems don't mean squat. And their technology doesn't mean squat. And therefore, Putin, stop rattling your sabers, killing your spies in Britain, screwing around in the Ukraine, and dibble-dabbling and creating mayhem and mischief in the Mideast. Because you may think you're hot stuff, but you ain't nothing. That's the message to Putin. And the message to Iran was, you think your nuclear facilities are safe because Russia gave you all these S-400 systems? You don't think Israeli and American and allied jets can get through and take you out? You don't think that we don't know about Hezbollah and your flow of blood money to Hezbollah so they can commit terrorist acts all across the West and particularly in Israel? Well, we know, and we can, and if you screw with us, we will, was the message to Iran. And there was a third reason that attack was done. What's coming up here in, what, 6 weeks or so? Oh, yeah. Donald Trump meeting with Kim Baby, Little Rocket Man. The summit of the Trump and the shrimp. On nuclear disarmament on the Korean Peninsula. And, you know, the precision with which this attack was apparently carried out by the combined militaries of three Western powers, using a huge variety of different types of very sophisticated assault weapons, B-1s, B-2, British Tornadoes, You know, various aspects of various navies, various types of missiles and cruisers. The B-1s apparently loosed special missiles I've never even heard of them before, with a 200 to 600 mile range, so the plane doesn't have to be in danger with pinpoint accuracy. Apparently, they can hit a 1 foot by 1 foot square target from 600 miles away. You can hold up your hands there, folks, and take a look at what 1 foot square by 1 foot square is. A monstrous missile from 600 miles away can fit and will exactly hit dead center in that foot you just made with your hands from 600 miles away. Pretty impressive. So I think there was a warning to North Korea. Without stating it, just by demonstrating it. And of course, any watcher of Western technology and military might probably knows that what we saw last night is just the tip of the iceberg of what is maybe available. So yeah, I think that the powers that be felt if Assad really gets the message and doesn't use chemical weapons anymore, and if we really manage to destroy some actual chemical weapons or chemical weapons manufacturing, that is terrific. But that's the icing. The cake is sending a message to Iran, sending a message to Russia, and sending a message to North Korea in advance of negotiations. That's the cowboy's take. Of course, what do I know? I'm just a little old hayseed in Wyoming. One of the things that we're going to have to do, and this goes right down to our fence thing, right? My story. So if our goal was to brush the field for what we want to get done for Iran and what we want to get done with North Korea and what we want to get done to tell Russia to simmer down and what we want to get done, even if secondary, on maybe stopping Assad from using chemical weapons in the future. If that was our goal, to brush those fields, I sure hope that the powers that be they checked all the fences of the field they just brushed. Because one of the effects it could have is just the opposite. Because it clearly demonstrates to Iran and to Russia, and certainly to North Korea, that none of those outfits can stand up toe-to-toe and have any prayer of coming out ahead in a slugfest with Uncle Sam or any of its allies, and certainly not with Uncle Sam and all their allies. It's just a slam dunk. I mean, basically, last night, we operated at will, folks, at will. Think about this. We have a supposedly smart enemy that supposedly is equipped with state-of-the-art, can shoot planes down, doesn't matter whose they are and what they're doing, blah, 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 blah. Russian technology. And we gave him 7 days notice. We almost told them when the attack was going to be with this deconflicted airspace messaging. We went out of our way to give the Russian signals and the Iranian signals, so we weren't taking out Russian and Iranian personnel. And even with 7 days notice, and I'm pretty sure the guys on the other side having a feel for what we were going to throw at them, I mean, I'm sure they know about the missile I didn't know about. They certainly know about cruise missiles, you know, a destroyer and a French frigate and an aircraft carrier. They don't hide too well. I mean, you kind of know they're there. This is not like a big surprise. They didn't suddenly come out of the fog. Oh, my God, it's an aircraft carrier. I had no idea. Even with all that notice, with all that telegraphing, with all that warning, with all that time to prep, they couldn't do squat. I mean, we just had our way with them. And you know the message that might send if we didn't check the fence of that field we just brushed? is to tell North Korea and Iran that the only way, the only possible way they can level a playing field or inflict some type of compensatory damage is indeed to have a nuke and the way to deliver it. So one of the things we might have done last night is to hasten the secret and clandestine development of top-notch nuclear weapons and the means to deliver them to the United States by the two most unstable potential nuclear powers in the world, North Korea and Iran. And by demonstrating to Russia that we could have their way with them, even though they have been beating their chest about how cool they are, we have motivated Russia to help North Korea and Iran achieve that, I don't want to call it nuclear deterrent, but shall we say, to achieve that only Hail Mary they're going to have in their toolbox. Because from Russia's viewpoint, I think as we all know, anything that's bad for America is good for Russia. So, I'm hoping somebody checked the fences before we brushed that field last night. Now, next week, I'm going to tell you a little bit about how Americans are funding terrorism, which, in my opinion, is kind of the fences down after you brush the field. And it'll shock you where your dollars, either your tax dollars or the dollars that you pay for products from certain corporations, is in the end getting back to Iran and other sponsors of terrorism. And then from there filtering to such outfits as, gee, Assad in Syria and Hezbollah on the Israeli border. But that's for next week. Now, finally, we're going to get to the alphabet segment. What all the Silicon Valley lefties are doing to try and influence you, control the information that is flowing to you, control the dissemination of information by any outfit of any viewpoint they don't like, and how they are absolutely positively manipulating elections. I'm going to start off with two kind of preps for you. Number one, we had the Zuckerberg testimony in front of the Senate and in front of the House this last week. And with very few exceptions, our congressmen and our senators proved themselves to be the inept, indirect, money-grubbing boobs that they are. A couple of senators had some good questioning. Ted Cruz did a nice job. The gentleman, I believe, is from Louisiana, did a good job. But Marsha Blackburn, who I think is terrific, she's now running for Senate in the House, did a great job. That's a campaign I'm going to ask you to contribute to, but that is yet another tale for another show. But most of them were just disgusting. I mean, just pathetic. And, of course, that might have something to do with the fact that Facebook and the other high-tech folks, I think it was $650 million in lobbying last year. Oh, well, you know, that's just a drop in the bucket given the corruption in Washington, D.C. And I'm sure that the Democrats love the idea that they're alt-left and they would like the world to only get alt-left news and to never hear a conservative thought because, you know, that's so American. So Zuckerberg got hung up. And I believe I have several articles posted. By the way, I got several emails saying, so where are these articles you're talking about on high tech and Google and the censorship and all this stuff? I'm sorry. You know, I should have mentioned this 4 weeks ago when I started talking about it. And you can go back at the website on therightsideradio.com and pull up those shows. You don't have to listen to the show if you already listened to it, or you don't have to listen to the show if you don't want to listen to it. But if you go to our big, juicy chunk of articles, probably one of the best collections in media anywhere every week, without fail, the producers do a hell of a job on it for you. And I personally pick the articles, by the way. I mean, it's a lot of time. And they do a great job of putting them up. If you go to the section of articles called Constitution, I have put all these types of articles, Google, Microsoft, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, you name it, censorship, algorithm manipulation, all sorts of other dastardly deeds, interjection in elections, attitude, ideology of the, as I call them, the alphabet boys. They're all under the Constitution heading of those shows in the article section for the last 4 weeks. They're worth reading. And my apologies for not pointing out where those articles were being posted under what category. So this morning's are posted again relative to the subject matter under Constitution. So Zuckerberg got hung up on a bunch of questioning, and I believe we have the video somewhere of his questioning on the show. He tried to pretend that he didn't know there was censorship going on. He couldn't answer why an obviously undangerous, non-terroristic Diamond and whatever her name is, the two black babes who are just a riot to listen to, pro-Trump conservatives. Diamond and Silk, thank you, producer. Diamond and Silk. With 1.2 million followers. I mean, that's kind of a big page. Why they were kind of taken down and stopped from Facebook, and Facebook didn't get back in touch with them, and Facebook finally sent them a deal saying, you know, your content's been removed or restricted or whatever it was, because we have deemed you to be dangerous to the community. The community, folks. Did you know we're all part of the community? Just like all those farmers in South Africa, now they're part of the South African community. So Zuckerberg, in my way of thinking, and I didn't watch all of it, obviously. I think he testified 5 hours at the Senate and 4 hours in the House, or vice versa. But I watched enough of it to know that he could not answer the questions on censorship. He dodged the questions way more than once. He kind of refused to admit there was censorship. He lied and said he was concerned about censorship, if any, in fact, existed. And he had no idea that folks like Diamond and Silk were being, like, taken off Facebook. And he couldn't explain what danger to the community was. And on and on and on. Well, obviously, he knows exactly what's going on. He's the CEO. And obviously, he reads. And obviously, he has a brain. And obviously, he was lying. Because that is what progressives do. And the fact that he did not, that he was not forthcoming, that he feigned ignorance, that he played stupid, cemented in my fact that he knows exactly what's going on, and this is what Facebook is doing. Stifling conservative voices and uplifting lefty voices. And it was solidified in my mind that he is no different than any other high place mucky muck in the alphabet boys. Whether it's Bill Gates, who's pretty open about what he's doing at Microsoft, or the alphabet boys that run Google, which owns YouTube, which recently removed any and all videos having to do with guns. Even instructional videos in gun cleaning and safety, by the way. I mean, gee, you want to make it safe, but you want to remove videos by professionals on gun safety. Got it. You bet. That makes sense to me. But we also had the spectacle in this last week of the CEO of Twitter. His name is Jack Dorsey. And there was an article that was written in an outfit called The Medium, which is pretty far left. And this article was co-written by two folks, Peter Leyden, L-E-Y-D-E-N, and Ruy, R-U-Y, Teixeira, T-E-I-X-E-I-R-A. And the article was titled, "The Great Lesson of California in America's New Civil War," unquote. Well, it just so happens that Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey tweeted, gee, what else would he do, that the article was great. I quote that, quote, great, unquote. And, quote, "There is no bipartisan way forward," unquote. And the United States and the country is engaged in a, quote, "fundamental conflict between two worldviews that must be resolved in short order," unquote. Let me tell you about this article that Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey thought was so terrific, just wonderful. Let me give you a quote. Well, let me give you some background first. So, Roy Baby and Peter Baby, the guys who wrote the article that Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey just thinks is the cat's meow, they argue that America is in the midst of a second major domestic conflict, kind of the new Civil War. And the only way out for the rest of the country is to imitate California. I'll tell you a little interesting tidbit about California here in just a moment. Let me quote from the article. Quote, "In this current period of American politics, at this juncture in our history, there's no way that a bipartisan path provides the way forward. The way forward is on the path California blazed about 15 years ago," unquote. Quote, "We only care about rule, Republicans only care about rule by and for billionaires at the expense of the working people and not average citizens," unquote. Okay. They also say, by the way, that the public is happy with its political leaders, unquote. Well, just so we got that in context, folks, Jerry Brown's approval rating in California is 44%. Higher than you would think if the population had a living brain cell, but nonetheless not overwhelmingly enthusiastic. And just this last week, a serious movement for secession, for the breaking of California. I told you a little bit about this 3 months ago. For breaking California into three separate states was launched and already has 600,000 signatures. I mean, that's a pile of people. You only need 360,000 signatures to put this on the ballot, folks. And just in the last week, a mega billionaire Californian stepped into the fray to lead the charge for secession. But these fools are writing about how California is the way forward, and Jack Dorsey fool is tweeting, as a CEO of Twitter, that is just great. Amazing. In this article, the article proposes that the Republican Party get taken down for a generation or two, unquote. And Dorsey, by the way, got hammered, obviously, by moderates and the right, and I don't mean moderate Democrats, there are none, by moderates, people, independents, and Republicans. And Dorsey has now refused to acknowledge that there's been shadow banning on Twitter, which has absolutely been proven. This is where Twitter, you know, you have a Twitter account, and when you tweet something, and I'm not a big expert on Twitter by any means. In fact, I'm not a big expert on tech by any means. But when you tweet something out, it goes to all your followers. And hopefully they retweet it, and everybody thinks you're really smart, and more people follow you so that your impact increases. Well, it just so happens that shadow banning, which is something that Twitter has employed with increasing frequency, worrisome frequency, over the past 6 months, is when you are a conservative voice and you think you have 5,000 followers or 10,000 or 100,000 or whatever, kind of like what happened to Diamond Silk over on Facebook, and you tweet something out or you post something on Facebook, and gee, it doesn't like, you don't get retweeted and you don't get any acknowledgement and nobody responds. And you scratch your head and go, God, what was wrong with that tweet or what was wrong with that post? Well, there was nothing wrong with it. Facebook and Twitter made sure it didn't go to any of your followers. You're tweeting or posting into a vacuum. So much for what you think or what you believe or the message you want to get out. In the meantime, Facebook gladly gives. I think you can, unfortunately, I didn't have time to find the video to put it up for you. But you can Google Facebook Obama Carol, the name Carol. And I think that will come up for you. And this is like Obama's geek wizard during the 2012 election saying right there on the video, yeah, Facebook gave us all the information on all its users, you know, like 2 billion. And we didn't have to ask for it. We didn't have to do anything because they liked us. And now, of course, we have the diversion of Cambridge Analytica, who is working for the Trump team, who got the information of 87 million Facebook users. Facebook is not embarrassed about the fact that Cambridge Analytica got the information from Facebook, folks. They're embarrassed that it was a Trump outfit that got the information. Understand the difference. I mean, you know, it's like everything else. The hypocrisy and the misrepresentation and the purposeful manipulation of even this information going to you is what the left does. So now, with those two kind of foundational stories, Dorsey, and by the way, it brings to mind both what's happening with Facebook and what's happening with Twitter, and what's happening with YouTube and taking down all gun-related, even safety-related videos. And what's happening with all these advertisers and Laura Ingraham and all the stuff I've brought to you and Citicorp not financing gun outfits and Bank of America now jumping on that bandwagon and Eric Holder's choke point, which is where he asked the banks not to work with gun people illegally, of course. He and Obama, their poison pill, another poison pill. What is to stop these people from exerting this kind of influence? Kind of like the IRS did and got away with it in the 2012 election with conservative groups. You know, Lois Lerner, you know, that whole scummy, traitorous crowd that was never brought to justice at the IRS. What is to stop Twitter and the rest of these outfits who are now kind of coming out of the closet? You know, Trump's bringing them out of the closet too. What's to stop them from trying to influence the 2018 election? These are the same outfits, of course, that will jump up and down about Russian interference. But they won't say a peep about the registration and voting by illegal aliens, and they certainly won't say a peep unless absolutely caught in the act, in which case they'll make something up, about them trying to sway and direct voters' opinion and voting habits by suppressing one line of thought and lifting another line of thought. Kind of a scary deal, if you ask me. So, kind of continuing with this, this is basic First Amendment stuff, folks, right? Basic First Amendment. The freedom of speech. And I have mentioned over the course of several weeks as I've kind of bopped on this subject rather than this morning's in-depth review that the Second Amendment protects all the other amendments, which is why it's under attack and why pro-Second Amendment is being drowned out and suppressed by these media, by these social media giants. Because if you don't have the Second Amendment, you can't defend your lands, right? And you can't defend your speech. And you can't defend your ideas. And you can't ensure that nobody's ever going to take any of those away from you. Do you understand how this all dovetails together? It's kind of scary. It's Orwellian, in fact. It's Orwellian. So, and by the way, America is unique in that First Amendment, I want you to know. We're unique. Yes, other countries profess to have the right to voice opinions. Ta-ti-ta. But we're the only one where it is a God-given right that the government cannot interfere with. In every other country, the right to speak freely flows from the government, which is why you don't really have the right to speak freely. Just ask the people that got jailed in Britain, that get jailed in Germany, and they get executed in China and Russia. All right. Microsoft. This has not been brought up because everybody's focused on YouTube and Google and Facebook and Twitter. But Microsoft is a giant in technology, and it's a giant in its own little social media. Messaging and all sorts of stuff like that. And what nobody's covered thus far is that Microsoft is also starting to crack down on what people say. If you're using Microsoft products like, you know, Windows 10, Windows 7, Windows XP, etc. There's now a new services agreement that just came out, written by Microsoft. And in it, it says that this tech giant is planning to ban accounts that, quote, use offensive language, unquote. Wow, that's generic and subjective. Like, what is offensive language? The sky is blue? Clouds are gray? Water is green? And they are going to start going, listen to this now, they are, according to this new agreement, they're going to start going through your private data to investigate all users. This was released, by the way, just in March 1. This is just over 30 days ago. And this new user agreement says that if you are using Office, Xbox, Skype, and other Microsoft-related products like that, that the company is, quote, prohibiting offensive language and inappropriate content starting on May 1. That's like 3 weeks from now, folks. Don't publicly display or use the services to share inappropriate content or material involving, for example, nudity, bestiality, pornography, offensive language, graphic violence, or criminal activity. Haven't we been told, didn't I just give you yet another story about how the alt-left is trying to almost criminalize the fact that you voted for Trump, criminalize the fact that you're Republican, criminalize the fact that you're a conservative? Where is Microsoft going with this mealy-mouthed wording? Offensive language. What does that mean? Does that mean that if you say I'm pro-life, is that offensive? I'm pro-Second Amendment, is that offensive? I'm pro-American, is that offensive? Graphic violence. If I'm demonstrating gun safety to my internet audience, I mean, I'm not, but I'm taking the generic me. Gun safety to my internet audience is the fact that I'm using a gun to instruct on gun safety. Is that graphic violence? This is scary stuff, folks. I mean, this is really, and the more subjective it is, the more loosey-goosey and untethered the words they use in describing what is not going to be allowed, the more nervous I get. By the way, Microsoft also adds in this user agreement that the company is going to be investigating users who are accused of violating the new policy. By who? We found out the Southern Poverty Law Center is involved in what Facebook deems to be offensive language. The Southern Poverty Law Center. That alt-left group of criminal crooks. who take in hundreds of millions of dollars a year, whipping up divisions by race, by creed, by religion, and yes, by international origin. Is that who's going to be deciding what content is what? Wow. I mean, wow. Let me quote another thing from the new Microsoft users agreement. Quote, when investigating alleged violations, alleged violations of these terms, Microsoft reserves the right to review your content in order to resolve the issue. Unquote. Well, that kind of sounds, that sounds a little ominous. All right. Let's go to something else. There's a guy by the name of Alexander Klimberg. He is kind of a guru and a specialist in and of all things internet. I mean, he's really kind of a go-to guy. He's like the Dershowitz, if you will, of the internet. And he published an article way back in January 14th, 2017, which was summarized by a guy by the name of Stephen Budiansky. Basically, he is saying that internet-born mayhem is creating a what he calls the darkening web. Unquote. This is both criminal enterprise and hacking and stuff, and non-criminal but un-American, unconstitutional enterprise in censorship. Quote, cyberspace is, he's talking about the future. Cyberspace is primarily a domain of conflict, threatening the overall stability and security not only of the internet, but also of our very societies, unquote. And the article goes into all sorts of things about cyber attacks that shut down hospitals in Britain and the United States, ATMs in Ukraine, railways in Germany, tens of thousands of other targets around the planet. And he goes into great detail about how the national security agencies for the United States need to focus on shutting down this criminality. And additionally, government needs to focus on the free flow of information, non-criminal information, you know, in other words, non-hacking, communications which don't infect computers, you know, not ransomware, et cetera, et cetera. So it's kind of a, he takes kind of a two-fisted approach. I mean, not only is he concerned about censorship through the Alphabet Boys, but he's concerned about a whole other realm of internet, which is the stealing of information, the tampering with information, and the monetizing of the theft of information by bad actors. And basically he says the combination of those two things could make the internet a really, really, really bad place to be, bad space to communicate in, and could undermine societies, period. He blends the two, I think, quite cleverly by saying that the security stuff that's being put together to fight the criminals, the ransomware guys and the hacking guys and all that, that same software is being used to spy on people around the planet, but on Americans. We already know that, of course, despite Mr. Clapper's lies under oath, and to restrict the use of the internet by some in favor of the few. And I quote, by the government to harass and spy on domestic critics, unquote. He breaks cyber attacks. He lumps all of this stuff into a broad term of cyber attacks. And basically, he breaks them down into three types of cyber attacks. There are those attacks which he calls kind of true warfare. And the The goals of those attacks are to achieve results which include taking out weapons, air defense systems, destroying a strategic target, such as, let's say, a power station or a dam or a command post. The second attack is the outgrowth of this burgeoning culture of spying on citizens by governments. He uses, quote, the NSA's longstanding efforts to penetrate global communications. What in the old days was done by monitoring radio transmissions and code breaking is today a game of penetrating computers and swiping information at the source, a skill which the NSA, the Russians, and Chinese have proved adept at. Lovely. And then the third form of attack is, and I quote, this goes right to the alphabet boys, the burgeoning field of propaganda and information warfare, alarmingly on display during the 2016 election. Anyway, this guy did a really nice job of taking a complex subject and boiling it down to its three simmering points of nastiness, if you will. Criminals, governments, the alphabet boys, and big tech controlling information. That's really where it's at. According to Klimberg, by the way, there are 25 billion, think about this now, 25 billion devices connected to the internet. That is like three for every human being on the planet, folks. I mean, wow. Wow. And he calls that the Internet of Things. This guy is a good thinker and concise in his communications. 25 billion devices. Think about the power that you could wield over people everywhere, not just the United States, if you could siphon information or monitor those 25 billion devices. And think about the power if you could control the information that the owners of those devices, the users of those devices, can obtain, can call up, or that we'll see. You talk about a situation that is rife for corruption. And by the way, if you happen to be some of these businesses like Facebook, if you get that information, you then sell it. So not only can you satisfy your ideological end, but you get paid to do it. You get paid to do it. There was another article that I've had here in storage for quite some time. In fact, it goes back to July of 2017. It's called The Saturday Essay in the Wall Street Journal, of all places. Quote, can the tech giants be stopped? This article is terrific, too. It talks about the top, what I call the alphabet boys. That is Microsoft, Apple, Amazon, Facebook, Twitter, and of course some of those outfits own yet other outfits like Google owns YouTube, etc. And the article goes on to talk about how, in the opinion of these writers, and I happen to agree, let me tell you, I can tell you I agree just by being a number one best-selling author with lots of awards, with my books on Amazon. Amazon kind of does what it wants with those books. It does what it wants with pre-orders and sales. It does what it wants with rankings. It does what it wants with reviews. And does what it wants with charging. I find the whole thing very frustrating, as do many other authors, and I've talked to many, 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 many of them. I haven't talked to a single author yet that says, I love Amazon. Not a single one. And by the way, books are information. Books are the writing of ideas. So just as if Facebook controls a post or Twitter controls a tweet, if Amazon controls whether or not you see where it places, blah, 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 what calls up when you hit certain search terms, a book, they can kind of dictate what you're going to see and what you're going to buy and what you're going to read, which kind of dictates what you're going to think, which kind of dictates what you're going to perceive, which kind of dictates how you're going to vote. That's the way it is. So the article goes on to say that in addition to all this bad, potentially bad, and in reality bad stuff that's going on, the drive for artificial intelligence, which is being funded to the tune of hundreds of billions of dollars by the Alphabet Boys, as it becomes, not if, but as it becomes implemented, will cost this economy somewhere around 20 million jobs. I want to repeat that number. 20 million jobs. Driverless cars on their own will lose this economy at least 300,000 jobs. That number increases to 1 million if you have driverless truck transport. So in addition to controlling information, controlling politics, controlling thought, controlling what you see and what you read, and getting paid to do it by advertisers and by the way they use the information. Remember I told you last week, Facebook does not think of you as you. They think of you as their product. And they sell their product to whoever wants to pay for it. Unless you're Barack Obama's campaign team, in which case you get it for free. So, in addition to all those things, what they're going to do to make themselves more money and control more and gather more information is going to cut their operating costs and increase their profits. There's something really obscene about this, folks. Obscene and scary. So, what this is becoming is kind of digital monopolies, if you follow my line of thought here. You know, in the old days, you had the robber barons with the railroad monopolies and the land monopolies and the cattle monopolies and the steel monopolies and the mining monopolies. I mean, you know, if you know American, well, hell, if you know the history of the planet, there's been monopolies in about everything everywhere. If you know the history of America, you know what all the big monopolies were. AT&T, I believe it was 30 years ago or so, was a communications monopoly. It controlled, like, everything. It had the phone lines, it had the phones, it had, you know, the dialing pads, you know, and the old rotary, whatever it was. They owned the telephone poles that had the telephone wires, and the government broke them up with an antitrust action, which, by the way, spurred like 50 new companies, all of which are billion-dollar companies now, and probably created millions of jobs that AT&T would have never spawned and never created. It was a good thing. And I've called for, and other people are beginning to call for, some antitrust action against the Alphabet Boys with, I think, the same beneficial and, in this case, protective results. There is another way to approach this, though, which is really fascinating. I'm going to tell you about it in just a moment. But first of all, let's finish where we're at. Let me give you some really scary stats. In August 2004, Google raised $1.9 billion. This is August of 2004, folks. This is like just yesterday. This is 14 years ago. Google raised $1.9 billion in its initial public offering. By the end of that year, the first year, Google's share of the search engine market had grown to just under 35%. Yahoo had 32%. MSN, Microsoft, had 16%. Today, 14 years later, Google's share is 87%. 87% of searches in the United States. 91%. That's unbelievable. 91% in Europe. Amazon, in 2004, had net sales revenue of $6.9 billion. In 2016, its net sales revenue was $136 billion. And it now controls, hold on your hat, 65% of all online new book sales, either print or digital. I mean, wow. You talk about the control of information. In mobile networks, social networks like Facebook and its subsidiaries. I don't know if you know this or not. I don't know if you knew that YouTube is now a subsidiary of Google. Did you know that Instagram, WhatsApp, and Messenger are subsidiaries of Facebook? I bet you didn't know that, did you? So Facebook and its subsidiaries control 75% of the American market. Now you want to know why I was so concerned about Mr. Zuckerberg's so-called testimony, unquote, and the imbecilic, uncomprehending nature of most of the senators and congressmen that were in those hearings? 75%, folks. That's amazing. Since the year 2000, the revenues for recorded music, you know, whoever you like to listen to out there, you know, Dionne Warwick, George Strait, doesn't matter who. Revenues for recorded music have fallen from $20 billion a year, we're talking about revenues that go to the music industry, to less than $8 billion a year. I mean, we're talking about a 200-some-odd% drop in revenues going to the music industry. And by the way, those records, if you want to look them up, you Doubting Thomases, are Recording Industry Association of America. Look it up. United States newspaper ad revenue. I mean, one of the few places you can kind of get halfway reasonable news is your local. I don't mean the Washington Post or the New York Times or any of those big city outfits with a national audience. I'm talking about your local hometown paper. Or at least you'll be able to pick out the bias. U.S. newspaper ad revenue fell from $65.8 billion in the year 2000 to $23.6 billion in 2013. That's the last year of the study thus far. I mean, another 200-plus% drop. Because information is now controlled by sources, and music is now controlled and sold, and books are now controlled and sold by outfits other than the people who created the music, the people who wrote the books, or the people who bring the news. So one of the things that this digital monopoly has done, in addition to the three prongs of really nasty dark web Internet of Things stuff that I was talking about just a few minutes ago, criminal activity, government activity, information control activity. But in achieving those dark ends, the digital monopoly has managed to depress huge industries, news, music, literature, and others. I'm just giving you those as an example. Quote, the massive growth in revenue for the digital monopolies has resulted in the massive loss of revenue for the creators of content. In other words, folks, when I write a book or Sally writes a book, or Joe sings a song, or Susie writes a song, or Sam reports on the local fire department, we have created content. We are creators. And where before the digital monopoly, we were paid for that creation, which of course encouraged and spurred more creation and more ideas and more good First Amendment stuff. Now, our creations are being taken by the digital monopoly without compensation to us and monetized so that they can control even more and more information, make more and more people and their creations products, and go hog wild in two of the three quote-unquote dark Internet of Things tangents. They're not criminal enterprises, but they sure as hell are hand in glove with the government collecting information, and they are the epitome. In fact, they are the control of information. In the third quarter of 2016, the companies that are owned by Facebook or Google combined got 90%, $9 of every $10 that was spent on digital ad revenue. All the other challengers, all the other folks struggling to get something done, get information out, make a living on, monetize, you name it, on the internet, all the others combined don't equal 3%. I mean, that's pretty amazing. The one exception happens to be China, where you have Baidu, a company by the name of Baidu, and Alibaba, which is kind of China's Amazon. The penetration by Facebook and Google and Amazon over there has not been nearly as complete as in the Western societies. Not nearly as complete. I'm not sure if that's a good or bad thing, actually. The devil you know versus the devil you don't. I'm not really sure. So, you know, there's some things that are starting to gin up to try and break this monopoly through the market. But my concern, is, like one of the outfits, by the way, is News Media Alliance. This is a group that represents U.S. Canadian newspaper publishers, which, by the way, includes Dow Jones, publisher of the Wall Street Journal. And they're calling on Congress to allow them to negotiate collectively as an industry with Google and Facebook on issues of revenue, customer data, news distribution, you name it. I don't hold out a lot of hope for that. I don't hold a lot of hope for Congress making Google and Facebook, who are spending $650 billion a year in lobbying, do anything. Not that I have any doubts about Congress. All right. Listen, I can go on with some of these stats, but I think that you have an idea. And I will tell you that there are other articles. Well, the Zuckerberg's hearings, the series that Tucker Carlson's done, I talked about last week, which is terrific, and the guests he's had, and a host of articles that are easy to find. Just, you know, Yahoo them. Don't Google them. Yahoo them. I will tell you that there's some researchers at Oxford University, Philip Howard and Robert Gorwa, and they wrote, of all places, in the Washington Post, which is owned by Jeff Bezos, the founder of Amazon, that Facebook, quote, has the metadata to identify precisely which fake news accounts were created, where they operated, and what kinds of things those users were up to during the U.S. election. Their data scientists could probably provide some insights that the intelligence services cannot. Forget what that sentence says. What that sentence means is that the digital monopoly has now come to a place where it is more powerful than government intelligence agencies in terms of the control, storage, retrieval, and use of data. And we're worried about Trump maybe being influenced by this, that, or the other. I wonder how much they would sell that data to China or Russia, or Iran, or North Korea. And listen, you know, these tentacles reach far. They go into health insurance and your health records and big pharma and anybody who wants to pay for data. The data is you, folks. You are the product. Do you understand now when I say you are the product? You are the product. Your data is all that matters about you to these companies. Because it's all they need to control what you think, and it's all they need to sell to others to make more hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars to increase their death grip on the digital world, on the Internet of Things. Quote, Facebook recently announced that it is trying to build, quote, optical neuroimaging systems, unquote, that would allow users to direct their digital lives just by thinking. If Facebook succeeds in creating this brain-computer interface, will we really be prepared to welcome such corporate access to our very thoughts? Questions of privacy will soon bleed into discussion of artificial intelligence. Google has already applied machine learning in its Google Assistant, which is currently available on Android phones. The Google Home speaker and Android Wear accessories like watches. Wow. I'm going to talk a little bit next week. This is the gist of really what I wanted to bring you, and I really think I hope it's brought some stuff to light that you haven't thought about, that you certainly haven't heard anywhere, that I know Tucker, even though his series was fantastic, did not bring up. And to give you a little background and some of these, I mean, these numbers don't lie. 90% market control, interface with government, 250% declines in all competitors' revenues, and like take Amazon, which is like, what, 6 into 136 goes 30 times revenue increases for the digital monopolies in the same time period. Those numbers speak for themselves, as do Jeff Corsi endorsing that article on Twitter, as does Facebook, you know, taking down Diamond and Silk. So I'm going to bring that to you. But, you know, I have an idea that might be way simpler than antitrust, way more palatable for our spineless, gutless, cojoneless politicians, just as profitable, if not more profitable, for the digital industries, the digital monopoly, and certainly promote some type of intrusion of fair market while absolutely protecting information and information flow. Think about this. What if Congress would write a bill that had one line in it? Well, I mean, if they could do that, you think Congress could write a bill with one line? Without writers? It's not funny. But the five words that the bill would contain is, quote, users own their private data, unquote. That's it. That's the whole bill. And if you did that, and I'm going to talk more about this next week, I want you to think about it. I'm just throwing out the big idea, and I'm going to get into the details next week because it's kind of fascinating. But if you did that, then instead of Facebook owning your data and you being the product, you would own your own data that Facebook could rent from you. And on the other side of the coin, to the extent you're willing to rent it, Facebook could sell it to others. And Facebook can charge you fees for storing that data in some type of safe vault that can't be accessed by Facebook or anybody else or any of their customers or Cambridge Analytica or Obama's campaign unless you say so, and then only to the extent you say so. Think about how cool this would be. You don't have to worry about your data floating around in the darkening web of the Internet of Things. Facebook doesn't have to worry. I'm using Facebook as an example. It works for any of them. Facebook doesn't have to worry about losing revenues, because any revenues they may lose because some people don't want to rent their data or don't want to rent all their data is more than made up by the user fees they will charge people like you and me who use their services. What a much more level playing field that would be. And a field where people could not control the flow of information. If you wanted to, since this is your data, Facebook may not control who sees your data except as you direct. If you're Diamond and Silk, you can direct that all 1.2 million of your fans and the friends of those fans and whatever other category there might be can see your data. You rent the data to Facebook for the use of those people. And those people are paying their monthly fee to Facebook to use Facebook to see that and other data. I'm going to examine this more next week because the more I think about it, the more I like it. It is so simple, it's scary, which of course is why probably they're incapable of enacting it. By the way, as I wind up here, we passed 2.6 million cumulative listeners this last week, my producers tell me, and the numbers will be changing on the websites and stuff. I think it was 2.53 here a couple weeks ago. I want to thank you all very, very much for listening to me, for putting up with the Cowboys croon from the middle of nowhere, Wyoming. I really appreciate it. And I'm going to ask you to throw likes at the Facebook page, please. For those of you who are readers of mine, those books are coming. In fact, I know many of you. I have about 200 emails jacked up on my author site on the Facebook Threads West page. Here, in fact, on the radio show, that I have not gotten to for the last 2 weeks. I'm going to answer them, folks. I am not ignoring you. But with the ranch gearing up for spring and brushing those fields, with the ranch gearing up for spring, working on the books and doing the radio show, I simply haven't had time to sit down and respond. My apologies. You'll be getting your responses. And you people who are waiting, you'll be getting your books. And, of course, you listeners will be getting your radio show every week. And pass the show on. Pass this link on. Post it in the deplorable pages. Post it on Instagram to those business associates you want. Tell your buddies about it. Tell your friends about it. Tell your girlfriends about it. I appreciate it a bunch. And I hope that my finally getting, after 4 months of threatening, to what I wanted to talk about in this digital monopoly world where we are entering, we are rapidly entering, if we're not already mired in it, gets you thinking. Particularly in conjunct with series other folks are doing on different tangents of this, like Carlson, Tucker's deal, and these hearings that were held with Zuckerberg, which were fascinating, and these other big CEOs. Gates at Microsoft and Corsi at Twitter finally coming out of the closet as to what they really think of what they're trying to do. I hope it got you thinking. Go that gun rally today. Just hours from now they start out east. Make your voices heard. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. And happy birthday, Thomas Jefferson.
Please remember, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archive and you'll find all of his shows. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side.